Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 7, coming at you with some pitching over and under performers, some recent news, and much, much more to get you ready for another week of fantasy baseball action. You can find me on Twitter at BDendrick, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, man?
I'm doing okay. I took the night off last night, Wednesday night, because I'm still picking up the pieces of Tyler McGill, his carnage. Who I felt so good about on pretty much all my teams, calling him Siler McGill and an inning in a third, and I think 9 earned. It still hurts. I'm trying not to have it ruin 2 days of my fantasy baseball life, but it ruined one. It didn't feel good.
Well, it's like they say, it's better early than later, I think is the term, because you can work out of this hole. But it sucks because everyone's like, oh, he's due for a, it's always like, oh, it sucks, he's due for a bad start. But it's like, was that the bad start we really wanted? I don't think
no.
so.
Like, no, and I saw comparisons to McGill's start and like Kyle Wright's start. It's like, yeah, ooh, but Kyle Wright only gave up 6 and he went, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe a couple more innings. Like, he started off real bad to be recovered, but man, McGill, especially. So like, yeah, I agree. The having this happen early is okay. It's just depressing to see your standings. I think I lost. In my main, I lost, I think, 9 points because of that start. So just because everyone's so bunched up. But that's what I get for looking at standings right now anyway.
Well, I'm a degenerate, and every night before I go to bed, I reload the page and see where my teams are at. And if it's like if I had a good day, I'd go and see the live scoring. Like, I'm an idiot like that. That's what I do. But it's also a good testament, and because I see it when I do that every night. There's still a lot of wiggle room in these categories, a lot. Like you said, you lost 9 points just by one start. There's some nights where I think it was Vlad Sedler posted a tweet the other day where he gained like 17 points in one day because he had like a couple big hitters and a couple big pitchers. Like, there's still a lot of room for stuff to happen. So, like, the moral of the story is don't get down yet. Keep grinding. Like, I know I've talked about recently is I started – so many of you are like 12th to 15th place. A lot of them now are like 7th to 3rd. Like, you can make movements on stuff. It's not the end of the world. So just grind your butts off is the best way I can put it. So
it's true that I'm glad you say that the Vlad example, because that's a DC that I'm in that league. And I DM'd him. Okay. I was like, dude, look at your team tonight. It was the night where Otani had 2 homers. Trout had a homer.
Trout,
one of Otani's. Yeah. Yep. So he started Trout Otani. But you can gain 15 points on a good night. You can lose 10, 15 on a bad night. So it's a roller coaster. Keep the faith. keep grinding. That's what we always say.
Keep on grinding. So we'll talk about some recent news to help you keep grinding, because there's some fun topics coming up here. A lot of it are loose ends. Like the first one we have here is Jeremy Peña left one of the doubleheader games today on Thursday. Did not return because he's day-to-day now with left knee discomfort. Day-to-day is not a bad thing, but it's not a great thing, obviously. He's made himself quite a name out there, being very productive in the fantasy streets, Ryan. So let's just say, going into this three-game weekend on an FBC format, how do you approach Jeremy Peña?
It sounds like he's already out Friday. So I think he's a bench if you can bench him for the weekend. And then you just hope that you can get him back on Monday, or maybe if they play Tuesday. I don't know if they have off day Monday or whatever. But yeah, certainly sucks, because Jeremy Peña is having an awesome season with six bombs, a steal, hitting 250. And I think there's even some upside in that. So at a 24-year-old, you look at, I know I'm HQ heavy here, but a Mayberry Method score for the, if you know, you know, 4.525 is pretty damn sweet. So yeah, let's just hope it's a short thing. It truly is day to day and he's back next week, but I think you do have to bench him if you can this weekend.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I'm worried about. He's a bench this weekend, and it's been weird the last couple of weeks with some of the scheduling. It's like there's been some interesting debates on benching some pretty solid players you've been rolling with all year for like four games here and three games here, and doesn't make you sleep easy, but it's kind of like we've been bred now, Ryan. It's like, okay, at bats. Mm-hmm. And some very good players said, even for instance, the first half, because the A's had nine games this week. It's only halfway through the week. But it's like, okay, they have five games against the Tigers, but really, like, how good are their players to make it count? And most of them didn't make it count. Some of them did. Most of them didn't. So it's a good point. There's a point where at-bats aren't the king, but it's a fun debate. So depends on, I guess, your option of Jeremy Peña, but with you, if you have something like with a good pulse, I'd play more Jeremy Peña this week.
Yeah, at most you're getting two games, but yeah, it is funny with that A's week. I had that exact conundrum. Do I have two games of George Springer Monday to Thursday, or five of Brown for Athletics? And I ended up staying with Springer. I just can't keep him on the bench, but
it's tough. Yeah, because I had like Teoscar and a couple other guys, and I was like, oh, what do I do? Robbie Grossman versus Teoscar Hernandez. Where do I get so many stupid little things? I think I went Grossman, which he wasn't horrible, but Teoscar got stole a base, like one of the few steals he's going to have. So there goes that. But we digress. The St. Louis Cardinals, they demoted Paul DeJong. Like, we know Paul has been struggling since his big year a couple years ago, but I don't know if I knew a demotion was coming into play. Let's put it that way. But he got demoted. Edmundo Sosa got reactivated. Like, rumor on the street is they're going to try to give Sosa the run to earn a job, keep the job, make it his job. But, you look at the roster resources and other projections, they still have Donovan and Sosa platooning. There's lots of questions there. People want – they're screaming for Nolan Gorman. There's so much fun, Ryan. So how are you approaching this situation in St. Louis where there's a lot of moving parts right now?
Yeah, a lot of moving parts. The demotion was a little surprised, I guess, just because DeJong's been around so long. It's like,
that's what it was. It wasn't the production factor. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a brutal start to the season. I had a lot of DeJong kind of late in DCs and kind of starting him as filler, but not anymore. It sounds like Sosa will take over most of the duties. We put an upside of Sosa of like 15 steals in the forecaster, which honestly isn't really saying much. If that's your upside projection, if everything goes well, that's not very good. Only hitting 160 through 25 at bat, striking out pretty much half the time. So I think this is an avoid, unless it's like a deep NL only league where any kind of playing time is there, especially with at least some latent stolen base upside with Sosa. But I think for now you avoid it and look elsewhere. Maybe hope Gorman comes up, but I think they would have called him up by now. It's been a couple of days since DeJong was sent down and there's no Gorman news. So we're kind of stuck with not much at short in St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. Like Sosa, we've seen who Sosa is. Let's put it that way. He's a deep league option, only option, as you mentioned. Like, he's not a world beater, and they kept Donovan up, which surprised me. I figured they'd do some other moves, so they might platoon more than we think, because Donovan actually played decent in a couple games. He's like super small sample, but he played actually decent in his first couple games. So that's still there. And I'm with you with Gorman. I actually had that conversation with someone else today. I said, if they wanted Gorman, they'd call him, because they called Yepes up and they played him every day. I feel like Gorman wasn't playing every day, or Sosa was coming back, so thus he's either getting sent down or not. So they're not going to mess with that, is what it came down to. That was my two cents, because he had his 13th home run of the year on Wednesday. Like, the dude, he's got nothing else to prove at AAA. It's just a matter of, I think they want to call him up when he can play. That's the bottom line. So it's tough in that regards, and I'm with you, Sosa. If you're super desperate, like in 15 teamers at a middle infield, I guess, but it's not a lovely ringing endorsement. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yep. Full agree. And I do wonder, like, if not now, then when with Gorman? I mean, you mentioned the 13 homers, but hitting what, 287, 350 OBP? Like, he's, I mean, what else does Gorman, unless it's defense, which is always kind of the de facto,
the default argument.
With the bat, there's not much left to prove in the minors.
Well, and this is the discussion I had. So we went around the Cardinals infield. It's like, okay, he's not playing Goldie at first. He's not playing third for Arenado. So now it's now Sosa and Edmund up the middle, and Edmund's playing great, and they want to give Sosa some run. So I guess it comes down to, they give Sosa a few weeks, maybe a month. If he doesn't pan out, you move Edmund to short, you bring Gorman up. That's the only thing I can think of. But it's tricky. It's because the outfield's full, to like with Yepes and company, one of them's DHing all the time. So it comes down to that middle infield for Gorman's chances this year, and might mean September if they actually play well. So I have to keep an eye on that one as well. Chicago White Sox. We got some good news, possibly, because sometimes when players come back early, Ryan, it's not as great as we actually hope it is. Like, it's fun. We get excited. Not always the best thing, but Eloy Jimenez is supposed to be out like 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks at one point in time. We saw him taking BP, running around. He's posting a little dugout scrum, as they say, afterwards. And he told them, and even the club backed it up, he's only out 2 more weeks. So, like, that return got cut down big time. You're probably happy if you're an Eloy guy, but how excited are you is basically what I'm trying to hack, because I'm still nervous coming back this quickly.
Yeah, it's always kind of bittersweet when you hear they're going to come back early. You just kind of have to trust and hope that they actually fully are healthy and he's not just itching to get back. We kind of saw this, I mean, for someone so young with him at his age 25 season, we like have some precedent here last season when he tore his pec, and we mentioned they had the funeral in April for him. Yep. He rose from the dead and hit 249 with 10 homers and like 200 at-bats last season. And a different injury. This is a hamstring. But there is some precedent of he was at least productive in coming back somewhat early. I think he beat the timeline on the PEC last year as well. So given that history, I mean, it's again, same team, same training staff, that makes me feel a little bit better. And the fact that it's a hamstring, it's not like a hand or wrist that might kind of sap your power once you come back. So I think it's great news if you held Eloy. I know Eloy was cut in a few leagues. We had that discussion a week or two ago about what do you do with Eloy. I think we said to hold him until you can't. And hopefully now with the news that he's back a couple weeks earlier, you can get him in the lineup and you won't have all those red suitcases piled up a month from now. So I think it's great news. I'm not too worried about Eloy coming back too soon.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for the leagues that he did get dropped in, because he did, like we talked about, get dropped. And like we've seen in recent weeks, Ryan, these guys get just massive bids for these prospects, and prospects are super risky. Like we've talked about it before. Like you get your random, like the Adalberto Mondesi call-up season and, Ronald Acuna call-up season. Like these dudes beast out. But for every one of them, there's like 12 guys that don't do anything. And it's for us. Like even Fabapalooza a couple years ago, somehow like Oscar Mercado was the big winner, and that just says everything you need to know about that run. So everyone that spent money on these guys, the ones that didn't might actually get Eloy Jimenez now, which goes to show you, like, there's never like a perfect formula, because you never know how this is going to play out, but it's just one of those deals, like, this could be fun. So if he's available in your league, good luck. I I usually don't bid super high. I would probably bid pretty high on Eli Jimenez, but that.
If he's available, I think you bid. I mean, it all depends on your league. If there's $0 bids or whatever, but I think you go real hard. Yeah. Just because, I mean, like you said, Bubba, this isn't just a prospect that you're speculating on. This is someone who can legitimately deliver. That said, I mean, Eloy's 99% owned in 12 team online championships. So there may be two leagues in the OCs where he's available. So it'll be interesting where he goes. But yeah, I think this is someone you break the bank for and figure it out later.
Yeah, I got four OCs. I need to go dig in. Now, I'm praying like one of them has him
available. If you're one of the...
It'd be so much fun. I doubt it. I doubt my odds are that good.
99% rostered and still 2% started, which is kind of depressing to spend $350 and still be starting Eloy. Well, that hurts.
That's a whole nother thing. I think it was Rob DiPietro a couple weeks ago tweeted out something about it was either Acuna when he was still out or some player that was clearly out was rostered in like 20% of leagues or something, like are starting. And it was like, you guys just spent $1,800. Like, interesting.
Bold strategy. In mains. Interesting.
Yeah, it was in mains. It was in
mains. I see, because when I do my draft, my first kind of pass through draft champions is I do pull up roster or ownership percentage and start percentage just to see if I have anyone on my bench who's just like way gone. And yeah, every now and then you do see an injured guy who's been out for a while and it's like 15% starting. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, that's always quite the shocker. Another one, though, you look at Nick Madrigal of the Chicago Cubs hits the IL. And, you know, Nick Madrigal, batting average guy, but all you're getting. But it potentially opens the door for everyday playing time for Jonathan VR. We've been waiting for this. This is the time to shine. If he doesn't, we have a listener question on this later, actually. Yep. But it's Johnny VR season, Ryan. And as a guy that's a big Johnny VR proponent, I'm excited in the leagues I still have managed to hold him because I've dropped him in other places because I just couldn't hold him any longer.
It is tough. So yeah, we do have that that listener question, and like VR it's been pretty brutal. He's hitting 243, which is kind of what we thought, but just one stolen base, an on base of 286 and no home runs. Now it's only over 70 part-time at bats, and VR is someone who in a week can get you five steals and all is well, all is good. And so this was the thing, and I know we talked about VR, I think one of our first episodes was he just has so many paths to playing time that eventually it's going to come through. So I'm not giving up on VR at all at this point. If you've held onto him, obviously you're playing him. I would be aggressive in leagues to pick him up, especially if you're starting to fall behind in bags, just because I think he's going to get everyday playing time Let's see once he gets into that groove if he returns to the VR of old. I mean, he's still only 31 years old. There's plenty of time to do that. So I'm not too worried and looking too far into the 70 at-bat sample. I am keeping my eye on the green or red light with Chicago because that is something like on a new team that could be an organizational philosophy. It might not just be a VR thing. So the stolen base attempt rate is really low right now. Could just be a matter of circumstance, but I'm still going after him really hard just because steals are at a premium and VR can make up a lot of ground, especially with someone like who's, you know, Mondesi's out, like all, Whit Merrifield isn't stealing, like a lot of the stolen base guys who we thought were going to be elite speed sources have not been. And so there's that opportunity to pick up a lot of ground.
I'm 100% with you. Like you said, we talked about it at the beginning of the season when he got this gig, and I drafted him in a ton of leagues late. And like I said, I probably have him in maybe a third to half of them still. And this is what we've been waiting for. We talked about the past the playing time. We just took one injury and we'll see how long Madrigal's out for. But if VR plays, they're going to keep him out there. So I'm excited about seeing what happens. We'll see. It's still a bad Cubs team. A lot can change, but you got to be kind of optimistic. We finally got that chance, and it only took about a month, Ryan. So it's kind of like we talked about, you know, he plays 130 games every single season, and here we go. Like, it's go time. So let's get some production. And you mentioned the guys that we expected to steal bases. They're not doing great right now. So this could be the golden goose we've been looking for at this point in time. All right. Los Angeles Angels, Vanaheim, David Fletcher, abductor surgery. He's gonna be out like at least 2 months, maybe more. Like, it's the big, I guess, kind of came out of nowhere to me, and then it got pretty bad real quick, is the way I'll say it. Right now, Andrew Velasquez is playing shortstop for Anaheim. There's probably many other ways they can go on this team. Any thoughts on this? Because I'm not running to grab Andrew Velasquez.
No, I'm not either. And I was hoping that it might be Tyler Wade from a fantasy standpoint. Like, that's who you want playing every day. We're just talking about VR speed. Tyler Wade's someone who I always get confused with Taylor Ward,
yep,
but is not. Tyler Wade's a speedster who had, I know a lot of this was kind of pinch run duties, but had 13 stolen bases in the second half of last season and just 78 at bats. So let's see where Velazquez, how often Velazquez plays. I agree, he's not fantasy interesting for me. Tyler Wade, I think we'll see. We just wrote this up at HQ. Should see a slight bump in playing time at second base and then fill in for Velazquez at shortstop. And like you said, the Fletcher injury is a lot. I think it's both adductors that he's.
It was gnarly. It was a bad, for, bad deal.
Yeah, that sounds awful. And it sounds like an extended absence. So hope it's Tyler Wade. Pick him up if you need steals. Probably not in 12 teamers, but maybe in 15s is probably where you want to draw that line, just because he is pretty deficient in power, but the batting average could be all right. Score some runs on a pretty entertaining Angels team so far.
Yeah, they're balling out right now. And the good thing is, you mentioned deeper leagues, I have him in a lot of DCs. Like, he was one of my favorite targets late just because of his multi-position eligibility and the steals upside. Similar to VR, now he's got playing time. Like, here it is. This is what you pray for in these deeper formats, and we'll see if he runs with it literally and goes. We can really, really hope for that with Tyler Wade. A couple other here. Mitch Garver of the Texas Rangers hits the IL. You know, it's a catcher stink. But Jonah Heim, that means he doesn't have to platoon with Garver. Garver's DHing and catching. But Heim's actually been kind of productive. And, Ryan, the catcher's position has been just horrific, absolutely horrific. Like, it's been beyond bad. I've been dropping Carson Kelly places and Max Stassi. I dropped actually before he went on the IL. And I love these guys, and I could see them being productive. But it's been so bad. Like, is Jonah Heim with a regular gig worth a look in certain leagues right now?
I mean, he's hitting 356 with three homers. Even if he was hitting 356 with no homers, no runs, no RBI, he's probably an upgrade over whoever the hell your second catcher is in a 15-teamer. But you look at the plate skills with Jonah Heim, I know it's just 45 at-bats, but a 17% walk rate, the K rate's elite. Our expected batting average for Heim is over 300 right now. That's going to fall just when the sample grows. But yeah, you absolutely take a shot on someone like this if he's still available, just because he has a pulse at catcher. And like you said, catcher's been so bad that Heim just kind of needs some playing time. And I think he could be, I mean, he could be a not number one overall catcher, but a catcher in one catcher leagues. If you're kind of streaming catchers or in a more shallow league, I think Jonah Heim absolutely is someone you want to go for.
Yeah, no, it'll be quite interesting to see what he goes for in Fab if he's still available. Because I know some people are already picking up on how bad catching's been. It's like, okay, I'll take three games of Jonah Heim each week or something and see where it goes. Now you might get five. So we'll see how that one plays out. Los Angeles Angels, Vanaheim, back to them. Max Stassi, like I said, on to the IL. Chad Wallach is supposed to step in as catcher. Got Austin Romine. Not doing a lot for me, Ryan.
No. Not doing anything for me, and we can move on from that.
Yeah,
because it's that's the part of the pool you don't want to wade in. That's yep. that's the deep end with the baby Ruth, the yellow stain. That's that part of the pool.
The you don't wanna, I love it.
You want to do that.
There's a good Caddyshack reference for those that aren't paying attention at home.
It's Sandlot. A good one. Sandlot.
Oh, that's right. No, didn't Caddyshack have a pool thing too?
Yeah,
I think it was Caddyshack.
We'll have to
look into that some more. Different note though, a pitcher we talked about a couple weeks ago. We were happy with the pitch mix changes. We're like, okay, like he's gonna have his bad outings, but there might be something here.
It was Caddyshack.
Okay, that's
more importantly, you're right. I'm disappointed in myself.
Yeah, because with Sandlot, it's all about Wendy Peppercorn.
That's right.
And Squints. It's all about Paul Sporer and Wendy. But
I can't recover from that.
When it comes to the Minnesota Twins, Chris Paddock was showing signs of life. Now he's showing signs of 60-day plus IL, which is dreadful. It's like we saw the pitch mix change. We saw the new off-speed pitches, and now his arm's falling off. Like, this is a bad conundrum we're in. This might mean Josh, and I apologize, Winder, I always screw it up. He should be locked into that rotation now, Ryan, and he's looked pretty good early on here.
He has. I watched Winder start today. He pitched against Houston, and Yordan Alvarez went deep twice off of him, and that's just a tough lineup to go through. But before today, Winder was really impressive in a few starts. I picked him up in TGFBI, of course, for this week, and that happened. But it was just, I think, one of those days for him. I think Winder is going to be in the rotation for a while. You've got his May 1st start was at Tampa, went 6 innings, 7 Ks, 1 walk, and then Oakland, which is kind of a punching bag right now in a second start, 8 Ks, no walks, but you're doing what you're supposed to do against that. And then as a prospect, we gave Winder number 3 starter upside in rotation. So not going to be like an elite kind of game breaker, but someone in 12s and 15s that I think is going to give you good ratios, pretty good Ks. And despite today's start, as someone who you want to target, especially with Paddock being out so long, I think Winder's going to be there for a while.
Yeah, it looks good for Winder, because I've had this discussion with Toby on Tuesday. I was like, I was kind of out on him. I didn't know how it would go. And like literally less than 24 hours, there goes Paddock. And yep, missed that boat. Missed it in a big way.
Paddock was one who, I know velocity talk, it's so overblown, but Paddock was one who had, I think, a 2 mile an hour drop in fastball velocity, and didn't end well.
Yep, did not end well at all. Speaking of Minnesota, we'll stick in Minnesota. Carlos Correa, we know they said he doesn't have like a serious injury in his finger, but they still put him on the IL to let him rest up. Royce Lewis got the call. Royce Lewis has been crushing AAA. You'd have to think when Correa comes back, Royce Lewis goes back down. But how do you maybe – what's your thoughts on that whole situation? Because Royce Lewis, he hasn't, like, burst onto the scenes in the bigs. But he hasn't, like, drowned either. Like, he's still kind of staying afloat. But you'd imagine Correa is just walking right back in, and I don't know where Royce goes after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Royce Lewis is going to really have to make a strong case to stay in the lineup. And even then, like when Correa is back, he's in. Royce Lewis doesn't have, I don't think, has an extra base hit so far. He's hitting 286 through 14 of plate appearances, no walks yet. You know, holding his own, but nothing special. I think if you broke the bank for Royce Lewis last week, I just don't think the playing time is going to be there. And even though with the IL stint with Correa, it doesn't sound like it's anything too serious. So despite all the hype and that sort of thing with Royce, don't buy into it. I think it's just a temporary thing, and he'll be back down soon.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's why I didn't bid much on him, because I was nervous about the overall playing time. And for now, I feel good about it. But hey, the dude's a beast. Like, if he ever gets his role, big power speed guy. But I just don't know where that role is going to go. They paid Correa and they paid Javi Baez, so it's tough to slide in that scenario. I know Baez is in Detroit. Never mind. Wrong team. But they have Polanco and they have Correa.
Hey, we're even. I said Caddyshack. So.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Baez, we're going back to Detroit here. And Akil Baddoo finally got sent down. He got the Badon't in this scenario. A bad joke intended. And it means like Will Castro, Derek Hill play center field. You got Austin Meadows, Robbie Grossman. Anything, any of these, like maybe Castro or Hill working out for you here? You're just like, it is what it is.
Definitely not Hill. He's not that interesting. Castro, yeah. I mean, Castro is the one who's been playing pretty much every day, although hitting like 6th or 7th in the order since Baddoo went down. Nothing too interesting there for me. I do wonder, like, if you drafted Baddoo, obviously you were pretty high on Baddoo given the draft price. Think you got to drop him unless it's a really deep bench, because it's not an IL stint. You can't kind of stash him on an IL. Yep. I think you got to cut bait and go. I think that's the real kind of decision that folks are going to have to make. Just a brutal start. 140, one homer, one steal. Not what we wanted outside of a top, 150 pick.
Yeah, that's the problem with Baddoo. It makes it really, really tricky there, to say the least. And it was weird too, because Ryan, early in draft season, like everyone's all aboard the Baddoo train, and then it seemed like as we got closer to the season, people were like, "Yeah, no, don't do it. Like something's not right." Like some experts had much better analysis than that. Like they dug into certain things on him, and it got ugly quick. It got ugly real quick for Baddoo. So maybe he'll figure it out and turn it around. But we also have to remember he's never played in AAA till right now. Like he got that Rule 5, and he jumped straight up to the bigs. I think he had a little Double A action before that, straight up to the bigs. Did his thing, but now he's going to get some more seasoning, and maybe it'll be for the benefit of everybody involved. A couple more here. Edward O, our buddy, It sucks. It sucks because he didn't get like the normal demotion we're used to with Edward O. He got hurt and it's a bad one. He's gonna be out for a little while here. And that just means we'll do this all over again. See you later, buddy. Any thoughts on because Edward, he was a popular until he got hurt on Sunday, was a popular ad with Kansas City, but now it just kind of clears the door back for like Michael A. Taylor, Andrew Benintendi and company.
Yeah, that was so brutal. I was ready to spend quite a bit amount of money on Fab on Oliveris. I just had a, I think, 7-game hitting streak before he got hurt, had that one huge breakout game where he went 4-for-5, 2 doubles, like, and was hitting leadoff every day in Kansas City. Like that was it. That was what he needed. And that injury came at the worst possible time. So in terms of replacements, yeah, like Michael A, maybe MJ Melendez gets a little more time at DH now. Just
when he played right field the other night too.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So maybe, I mean, they're kind of scrapping. I was interested to see Kyle Isbell. He's the one who's, you know, a little bit interesting to me just because there's some power speed combination there, but he's just not playing enough. Like he's only playing as a lefty. He's only playing against righties, and Kansas City has faced lefties 3 of the last 5 games, and Isbell's only played 3 of the last 6 in right field and a little bit of center. So Isbell's the one, if you start to see him in lineups and that sort of thing over the next couple of days, that's someone who I might look to target this Sunday in Fab, just because I think there's at least a heartbeat there as opposed to Michael A. Taylor in center field.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one because Isbell did get some pump going towards the beginning of the season, and now he might get some runs. So that's a good call with him, because most will look at Taylor and company. So and Taylor, I loved in like DCs, because as boring as he is, he plays almost every game and gets you like 15-15. Like in DCs, he's the perfect late round pick. You know, in other leagues, it's a little challenging at times, but he gets the job done if you stick with him. So we'll see what Isbell can do if he gets a chance as well. All right, it's Bloom Boards time. Let's have some fun here. Over, under, pitching performers thus far. In order to talk about over-unders, Ryan picked out 3 categories: BABIP, left on base, and home run per fly ball. Ryan, the floor is yours to explain this Bloom Board.
All right. Over-under performers. We're also going to keep with that over-under theme tonight and make some calls, hold ourselves accountable, and let's see who wins this thing, because we're going to do an over-under of a 3.75 ERA for whoever we talk about for the rest of the season, starting today through the end of the year. But yeah, to kind of set the floor for some of these boards, the three, what I call them, basically are luck factors for pitchers. And there is some debate about this. There are, I do believe there are some pitchers, like Walker Buehler comes to mind, that can consistently outpitch their skills. I don't think that's a skill that most pitchers have. I think on the aggregate, at the macro level, and years of research at HQ, this holds up, is pitchers have very little control over batted balls outside of ground ball, line drive, fly ball. So BABIP, left on base percentage, and homer to fly ball are things that typically regress to league average and don't follow a pitcher's baseline. So what I mean by that is if somebody gives up, you know, the league average homer to fly ball rate right now is 10%. In the majors, if there's a pitcher who had a 15% homer to fly last year, 15% homer to fly 2 years ago, our research has shown that he's still more likely to fall back to league average 10% than to keep that 15% homer to fly. So what I did with these is I used those 3 luck factors, and I went with 16 overperformers, 9 underperformers, who are hitting the trifecta. So these are guys who have luckier than average BABIP, luckier than average left on base percentage, and a luckier than average homer to fly. And then for the underperformers, I did the opposite. So some really interesting names. The overperformers all have ERAs like under 3, because when you are this fortunate with your batted ball luck, it's really hard to not have a bad ERA, even if you don't strike anybody out, which some of these guys might not.
Well, it's so fun to see this because, oh yeah, he is on the underperformers list. I wanted to double check. I was going to say Brandon Woodruff is like the great example. You even tweeted out stuff today, and I've seen other stuff tweeted out recently. Is people look at like just this one line, but it's like you look at BABIPs, you look at left on base rates, you just Woodruff. We'll get into him. It's not even close to the norm for him. Not even close. But he's still striking everybody on the planet out. So like I'm confident in what's going on there. we'll get into him. But some of these overperformers is fun because in the Discord that I run for like DFS stuff, people go like, why do you keep targeting this pitcher? I'm like, because he is who he is. And that's the easiest way for me to say it. But I said, if you want to get into the metrics, regression is coming. Like, it is coming. There's no way to pitch this well for this long. It might not happen today. It might happen tomorrow, but it's coming. And then when it happens, like, oh, I got it. It makes sense now. Gotcha. I'm like, this is just how baseball works. Now, he's going to be bad, but you can't pitch this well for this long. A bad start is coming, a.k.a. Siler Megill, like you started with. Like, he's still a very good pitcher. The bad start was coming.
You had to bring him back up. Man,
it was an easy example. It was an easy example. That's all I had to say. I apologize. I have him rostered too, if it makes it feel any better.
You hit the nail on the head. And the big thing too, like, and the reason why we're talking about this now, it is, you know, we heard all April how, you know, it's only April, it's a month, let this thing wash out. If you're in a trading league, people are starting to get a little itchy. They're starting to feel really good about their pitchers that have pitched absolutely great. And they're starting to get a little itchy on that. Maybe that Brandon Woodruff, who has been terrible on the surface, but seems like the same exact guy beneath the surface. So it's around this time of year when I think you can really kind of hit this trade market and target some of these guys or sell some of these guys. And the reason why we're picking like a 3.75 ERA is, yeah, like it's easy to say, anyone in the world can say Zach Gallen is, he's not going to maintain a 0.95 ERA. Right. Corbin Burnes in his best season could not maintain a 0.95 ERA. That's not what we're saying. The question is more just like how regress to what? Like how hard is that going to hit? Is he going to be a 3 ERA guy the rest of the way? Is he going to be a 4 ERA guy the rest of the way? I think that's where we really kind of want to dig in and see the true skills of some of these guys.
For sure. Definitely. And yeah, and it's like you're saying is, and I've told people this, like, well, I say regression, but there's positive, there's negative. And it's not meaning they're going to be horrible, but like, let's start with Michael Kopech, 0.93 ERA with a 214 BABIP, 83% left on base, 0% home run to fly ball. Like, he might have like a 3 ERA, which is still outstanding. But to go from where he is to that, there's going to be a hiccup or two. That's just the way it's going to go. So the end of the line will still be very good, but the regression is going to hurt a couple times along the way. So with Michael Kopech, what do you got when you look at these numbers? Because the BABIP's insane. The K to walk at only 15%, which is surprising because you expect a little wider gap in the K to walk if he had control, but he doesn't, obviously. So how do you see with Kopech?
Kopech, I kind of gave him a pass a little bit early on because one of the first things we look at is, and we've done episodes on this, is changes in velocity, in fastball velocity. And Kopech was one of the top guys who lost fastball velocity. But you look at the context, he went from the bullpen to the starting rotation. And so I expect if he wants to go deeper into games, he's not going to go all the way out, and you would expect a couple mile an hour drop. So I gave a little bit too much, I think, credit to him for that. There are a lot of kind of troubling signs beneath the surface. The big thing for me is the whiff rate. 10.9% swinging strike is actually below average for starting pitchers. And then you look at the walk rate has spiked up a lot. And this is pretty much all smoke and mirrors. A 214 BABIP and no home runs on the season. And the last thing is, Kopech hasn't really, like, he's worked on the curveball a little bit on his third pitch. He's only throwing it 14%, but he's still so fastball heavy, 66% fastball usage. We're projecting a rest of season ERA for Kopech of 3.85 at HQ, and I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to say Kopech the rest of the season, even though he has a 0.93 ERA, I'm going to take the over on a 3.75 the rest of the year. And that's not even kind of taking into account the volume concerns that may strike in the second half as well. So I'm taking the over for Kopech.
You know, what's pretty crazy is you look at his underlying numbers here, 0.93 ERA, 3.99 Sierra, 4.24 XFIP. So it's kind of in line with what you're saying. He's getting the job done, but there's a lot of skepticism on how he's getting the job done. And you look at what he's, like you said, what he's doing, he's getting, you know, the good numbers you're hoping for, but it's not the elite numbers, and you got the left on base rate and all that other goodies. It's walking guys 11.5% of the time is never going to cut it. I don't care how long you're out there. It's going to eventually come up and bite you in the butt, and that's going to be a problem. So Michael Kopech, we have Bloomfield with the over, and the volume is the biggest question I have in the second half, and the volume could keep it under, which is interesting. If he's, this is a tough one. I'm going to go just to be different. I'm going to go under on this one, but I'm very nervous about it. It's going to be close. Like all the rest of season projections have him between 3-7 and 3-8. So it's a great rest of season projection. It's right on the number we're talking about. So I'm going to go under. Ryan Bloomfield.
We got to disagree on a few of these guys. So that's good.
We can't make it super simple. That's for sure. Let's have fun with this next one. I'm not going to go down the list for all of these. Ryan tweeted this Bloom board out, but this is a fun one because I think we've talked about him at least every other episode now. Michael Wacha, the dude, like, you got me turned on to him before the season started as a late round pick because he has the two starts in like leagues. I'm like, okay, cool. I got like my 30th round pick. I was taking him everywhere. It worked out great. It worked out just like planned. Thing is, he's still doing it, but it's confusing because it's a 162 BABIP, a 94% left on base. Hate to break it to you, folks, not sustainable, and an 8% home run to fly ball. So, and an 8% K to walk. Like, this is just abysmal numbers in the grand scheme of things. So, I know my answer already. How are you looking at Michael Wacha?
I'm worried about the injuries too. Like, I mean, he's on the IL right now, intercostal strain. So, like, I can just
Does he stay under because of that?
Yeah, just by default, he's out for the season. So I win if I say under. No, I'm gonna go over. This is I mentioned this last week where like I was big on Wacha as like a 26th or 27th round starting pitcher. A couple good matchups at the beginning of the season. You looked at the surface stats, like victory lap, but no, it's a lot of bad stuff beneath the surface. The biggest thing for me is just the strikeout rate, single digit whiff rate. Like the K's are not there. He is putting the ball in play way too often. And the other thing, which, you know, kind of the elephant in the room here, if we're talking rest of season ERA, what's that ball going to look like in the summertime? Are we going to switch balls? Are we going to have this bowling ball anymore where the league average ERA will shoot up over 4 if it does? But anyway, that's a whole separate thing, but I'm taking the over on Wacha. I'm guessing you are too.
Yeah, I'm taking the over. This is a quick one for me. Part of it's because I dropped him everywhere, so he needs to go over now because I'm very bitter about missing these other starts. But it's also it's the whole like the same people have. They're empty starts. Like, okay, the ratios are good, but there's like no strikeouts. I don't even know if he's getting wins right now. I'd have to go look in 2 seconds, but he's just, they're boring, empty starts with Michael Wacha, and eventually that train's going to come to an end. So, yeah, I'll take the over as well. Let's go to Zach Gallen. This is a guy that people were excited coming into the season because you were one of the proponents saying he pitched more innings than anybody in the second half of the season. Health should be good. And there's like some concerns early on about health, but he powered through that. And now he's got a 0.95 ERA, a 216 BABIP, an 88% left on base, and a 0% home on the fly ball, but a 20% K to walk, which in my book, 20% or better is pretty dang good, pretty close to elite type stuff. So he's doing some stuff very well and also getting very lucky in other avenues, Ryan. How do you look at Zach Gallen?
Gallen's like, yeah, he's the poster child for this 375 mark. Cause so Steamer rest of season has Gallen at a 395 ERA, Zips has Gallen at a 383, and then the bat at 373. So all the projection systems on Fangraphs are right there. For me, I'd like to see a few more whiffs, but I'm taking the under. I think Gallen's good enough to hold this under with, like you said, Bubba, the key metric that I'm looking for. And if you've just got one metric to look at to evaluate these guys so far, it is that strikeout minus walk rate. And 20% is really good. A lot of that is driven by, I think, an unsustainable walk rate. Like the control's been really good for Zach Gallen, 3.7 walk rate when in his career he's a 9% guy. So I think the walk rate's going to come up, but I do think he's capable of missing more bats than he has been so far this season. So I'm taking the under on Zach Gallen, maybe like a 350-ish ERA the rest of the season. Obviously nowhere near 0.95, so a sell high, absolutely. But your trade partners are smarter than they used to be as well. Like everyone knows Zach Gallen is not this good, but I think 350, I think he beats those Fangraphs projections.
It's a tough one. This is really tricky because like I've witnessed the Zach Gallen disasters. And then we saw like the, even when he's hurt, he pitched really well. So it's tough. And like you said, I love the K to walk numbers. Like that's a thing. Even at First Pitch Arizona last year, when Eno was talking, I got on a rabbit hole of just searching K to walk guys on Fangraphs. And I started talking with Pollock and Spore afterwards, and I'm going through a whole thing on different guys that stood out. And that's how I kind of started focusing on some late round picks. And if he's getting 20% K to walk, and again, the walks might be the lucky part, that's great. He's got the 0% home run of fly ball. And even with all the humidor talk, Arizona had a humidor last year and it was very pitcher friendly. So that's like we talk about certain stadiums because, you know, like 80%, 85% all have humidors for the first time. Arizona's not one of those. Like, we've seen what they do with the humidor, so we can't just like blame it on that. This is a tricky one. Like, I want to be different than you to keep this really fun, but I think if anybody, out of a handful of guys on this list, he feels like one that can kind of outperform some of the other metrics. Now, I'll be honest, he's not like the, you know, 88% left on base isn't even that far off. Like, he's not. I'm gonna go under. I'm gonna, instead of blabbering over and over again, I'm gonna go under. But this is one of the close ones. This is a really tricky one. So I'm gonna go under, and I hate it because we agreed on this one, and he's in the NL West, which really sucks. But I'm gonna go under on that one as well. And I'm keeping a log, folks. So we are gonna revisit this situation.
I'm also keeping a log in our doc. Yeah. We're gonna compare, make sure this is tight, because we might have to throw a wager on this in Arizona this fall.
Yeah, whoever, this might be, you know, who's buying beers at the Fall Stars game. Like, this is fun stuff.
It's important stuff.
Yeah, or who doesn't get to drink for the live show? I don't know. Just throwing it out. All right, let's talk Miles Mikolas, because this is the dude that Toby's been on forever. I finally jumped on board like week two of Fab, and I've been rolling with them because my biggest concern coming into the season is he doesn't strike guys out. Well, now he's close to a K per nine, which is at least respectable and doable. Like, you can work with that with Miles Mikolas. He's also got a 244 BABIP, an 89% left on base, and a 5% home run to fly ball. He's still walking too many guys, but he's getting the job done for now on a team with a good defense behind him and a pitcher's ballpark. So what do you got on Miles Mikolas?
Sorry, Bubba. Sorry, Toby. Sorry, Toby.
Yeah, apologize, Toby. I have no problem cutting bait. He's, like, invested.
And as well he should. I saw he had a screenshot the other night. He's got Mikolas on like 20 teams, yep. Which is amazing. 149.
He drafted him. Fab picked him up. Big difference.
Big difference. I want to believe that there's some change here. Like, yes, there's some uptick in walk rate from 2021. In strikeout rate, but there's some pitch mix change there, so like you're starting to kind of build towards that. He's throwing more sliders, throwing more curveballs this season, but you look at the swing strike rate, 7.5%. I mean, he's not missing anything, and you know, he gets ground balls, but not to an extreme. It gets a lot better once you're over like 50, approaching 55%, and Mikolas is only at 48.8% right now. So all the projection systems have him right around 4 ERA the rest of the season, and so that's where I'm going to side. I'm taking the over 375.
This is fun because I agree with everything you said, but then I look at his schedules more often than not, and it's Pirates and the dreadful Reds, even Great American Small Park, still the dreadful Reds. Like, the division is so beyond bad, like so bad. And, oh man, this is tricky because the one thing Mikolas did well, he didn't strike guys out, but his ratios were pretty good. So you took the over. I'm gonna take the under, and I don't like it at all, but I'm taking the under because I think there's something. I agree the swinging strike rate is less than ideal in a big way, but the pitch mix change and the ability to strike guys out, I'm gonna take my chances with Miles Mikolas on this one. All right,
you're wrong, but that's
I
right.
could be for these
because I think some of that you're trying to be a little different. How about these next couple ones? You'll go first, and then I'll rebut.
Well, I'll let you pick the next one. Oh. I'll let you pick.
Oh man, all right. Yeah. Overperformer. Let's go, Joe Ryan, who I'm fascinated in. So some of these guys, like Urias, is on there. I think Urias goes under just because he's kind of outpitched it before. Joe Ryan's someone I'm really interested in. I don't have any of Joe Ryan. Excellent start, 256 ERA. How much of that is driven by a 228 BABIP, a 5% homer to fly? What are you thinking with Joe?
Man, I know it's not always the best to look at like those long-term numbers. Like, you know, you got that 2.56 ERA. He's got a 4.3 xFIP. Like, that's a jump. That's a jump. And Sierra's even high. And you look at just the overall metrics. 12% swinging strike is outstanding. I'm not going to knock that. His contact rates are pretty low. He's getting guys to chase outside the zone. Ooh, this is tricky because he gets away with the fastball. In his last couple of starts, he has not gotten away with the fastball, but keeps the ball in the ballpark, as you mentioned, the home run, a fly ball. This is a tricky one. With Joe Ryan, I am going to go over 375. I think there's going to be some hiccups in that division. I'm going to go over 375 with Joe Ryan. What say you?
I unfortunately agree with you. I lean more towards FIP takes a little bit more of the home run control into account than XFIP does, which pretty yeah. much regresses everyone back to league average. And that's why there's that kind of big gap between those two. But I lean always a little bit more to that home run luck coming back. So, you know, things look pretty good for Joe Ryan. The other thing is we're going to get more of a book on him the second, third time that he starts facing a lot of his major league opponents. So I'm gonna go over. I think teams are going to start to kind of figure out what he's doing, and I'll agree with the projection systems who all have him around a four. I'm pulling up what HQ has for Joe Ryan as we speak for rest of season ERA. We've got him at 407. So I'll take the over too.
All right, let's have some fun with this one, because I was out all draft season on Pablo Lopez because of his shoulder injury. Yeah. He was just a cross off my list. I'll go on elsewhere, is what it is. Boy, have I been wrong. That's just the best way I could put it. An ERA of 1, 247 BABIP, you know, like, it's good. It's not horrible. Like, he's not getting super lucky. It's good. 88% left on base, 4% homer to fly ball, pitches in a very good pitcher's ballpark. Got to remember that too. And a 20% K to walk. Like, an ERA of 1, not sustainable. But ERA of 3.75, Ryan, that is the question.
Under. I mean, I love Pablo Lopez. I had Pablo Lopez on a lot of teams last year and ultimately did get burned by the shoulder and those concerns and have been totally off of Pablo Lopez coming into this season because I was just, I mean, shoulder injuries scare the crap out of me. And maybe this is someone who won't qualify. I don't know if we have a qualifier. Maybe
we don't, we'll have to throw like 50. We'll do a gentleman's agreement if something happens. Like we can make it amicably agreements on this.
Yeah. I mean, Lopez started out rough 2019, but in 2020, 3.61 ERA, 3.07 ERA last season, and swinging strikes are up. You know, he's got great movement on the cutter. His fastball's great. Gets ground balls. Everything looks great to me. No, he's not going to have a 1 ERA, but I could see him being. I mean, I'd be aggressive with Lopez. Like, I think he's going to teeter on a 3 ERA the rest of the season. So I'm a big fan of Pablo Lopez. I think he's going to crush a 3.75.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's what's frustrating, because I loved Pablo Lopez last year, everything about the guy. It was just like the reports on the shoulder injury. I'm like, it terrified me, absolutely terrified me on what's going on. And it's like the old Pianowski and everybody else, like any smart analyst goes, like, guys are getting injured already. Why draft an injured player? Well, either the reports are bad or what happened, but he's fine right now. Now, could he get hurt tomorrow? Yes, in 2 seconds. But he's pitching through it right now, so I'll take the under as well.
Would you take over under at 3 flat ERA for Pablo?
I'll take over.
All right. So we'll say you're over on that one with 3 ERA. Just so we're a little bit different.
Yeah,
three's tough.
Really tough. Like he's still a really good pitcher if he's like 3-1. Let's put it that way. So like, there's nothing against him at all if he gets to 3. So especially if it heats up in the Southwest there against the Braves and stuff, there could be a bad day. There could be a bad day coming. That's just the way it works. But I think he's still pretty solid. Before we go to underperformers, any other overperformers you wanted to discuss, or do you want to move on to the underperformers?
No, I think we're good. I was going to bring up Tyler Anderson, but I think he's an over because he gave up, I think, 7 runs as we speak to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And so that's already starting off not well. So
the regression train came early on this one. It's already arrived.
I mean, a couple other guys on there, like Kershaw shows up on the list, a 180 ERA, yeah. Like really good peripherals. But again, I think he is one of those guys, and a 27% strikeout minus walk rate. Like, I'm not messing with that. So, I think the other guys on here are all pretty obvious. Like Jose Quintana, I think.
Yeah, that regression train is going to be amazing when it hits. It's going to be glorious. Like eruptions going off in Pittsburgh when that takes place.
Let's pivot to the underperformers.
Underperformers, and I hinted at him. I don't think we need to talk a lot about Brandon Woodruff. I think we're kind of on the same page on Brandon Woodruff. So just want to let people know, like, go check out the chart or the bloom board that Ryan put out there. But don't panic yet, guys. Like, stay the course with Brandon Woodruff. That's all I have to say. So let's talk about some other guys here real quick, though. Nick Pivetta, this has been a popular name, that's thrown out there because the velocity's up. He's still getting strikeouts. He's shown signs of life. I love the Pivetta truthers. Like, first two innings weren't great, but the last three were awesome. Like, we have hope here. Like, you've seen that everywhere on Twitter. It's been great. But, you know, the 608 ERA, 356 BABIP's pretty freaking wild. 68% left on base, 13% home run to fly ball, and only a 13% K to walk. And his strikeout stuff's pretty legit. So if he can get the control under, that should at least, I'd say, go 16, 17% at least. So what's your thoughts on Pivetta? He's at a 608 ERA right now. Does he get to 375 or lower the rest of the way?
That's going to be tough for Pivetta. However, I am going to take the under. What we've seen from Pivetta in his last few starts looks really good. A couple tweaks to the pitch mix. Actually, lower velocity in his last couple starts, but I think that's by design. 13 strikeouts to no walks at Baltimore and versus the White Sox. So I'm going to take the under. I don't know why. Like, I have been completely burned by Nick Pivetta in the past, and he has a career ERA of 5.20. So I'm kind of talking myself out of it while we do it. I'm still going to take the under. I like what we've seen from Pivetta, and so I'm going to go out on somewhat of a leap of faith and take the under 375.
I hope you're right for some of the shares I have in DCs and whatnot, because I keep throwing them out there. But I'm going to go over just because I think he'll still be much better than what we're seeing right now. I'm not going to knock that at all. But just the lazy answer to that division, playing the Jays, playing the Yankees, like, there's going to be a certain games. Like, we are Eovaldi truthers, Ryan, and there's still certain games like his last start where you're just like, it happens. Like, it happens. It's just the way it's going to go. These guys throw gas. They get strikeouts. Every once in a while, you miss your location enough, and these big boys in the East are going to take you to town. Just how it's going to go. So I'm going to take the over on Nick Pivetta, but I think it's more like around 4.41. Like, so he gets a good drop. Good drop. Don't know if he gets a 3.75. So that's my call.
Yeah, I'm already not feeling good about that one, but that's okay. I'll stick with it.
You went on a limb. I'll give you credit. Let's have some more fun with this. Let's go to everyone's preseason favorite, Mitch Keller. 6.11 ERA, 3.31 BABIP, 65% left on base, 12% home run to fly ball, only an 11% K to walk, which, you know, the preseason video, the spring training stuff, it was strikeouts, gas, all this stuff. There's been like small glimmers of that, but we haven't seen it put together for a full start yet. So are you optimistic or not?
I'm not. And I really did want to. I did kind of fall for not just fall for the video, but fall for kind of the sustained velocity, which Keller has held the velocity gains this season. What I like to see, though, with just, you know, not just the fastball velocity, but is it leading to more strikeouts? It's not. Strikeout rate is flat at 19%. Is there, maybe he's getting a little bit unlucky? Is he getting more whiffs than he did in the past? Technically, yes, but he went from terrible 8.2% swing strike rate last season to just bad 9.5% this season. So despite the increase in velocity, I'm just not seeing it from Mitch Keller. I want to believe it, but I think he's more of a kind of mid-4s ERA guy. And almost kind of a streamer at this point, depending on matchups in that division. So I'm definitely taking the over with Mitch.
I'm going to take the over as well. And you hit on all the big points. So what I want to mention is we said it with Pivetta, like, you took the under, I took the over, but I said like a good 4-1. You even said with Keller, like, you know, 4-1, 4-2, that's still a very good regression from where they're at. So that makes them at least, you know, like you said, streamer options. It's the old saying, like, with the guys that start the season well, start the season bad, but you don't get those stats. You're looking for what's going ahead. So, you know, these guys might not be great, but you might get some much better starts than what they've been producing.
Yep. And so you look on the surface, like, yeah, I agree. I mean, you saw Mitch Keller last year, 6.17 ERA. You're someone in your league says, oh, he was a, idiot Bloomfield said he's a sleeper. And so I'm going to pick him back. I'm going to pick him up. I'm going to draft him. 6.11 ERA. I'm cutting bait. He's going to be a lot better and has been a lot better than what we've seen so far. It's just league average or 3.75. That's a lot to ask given what we've seen.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. So that's why I just want to clarify that, because I'm like looking at this underperformers list. I think they're all going to be better, but I'm trying to find one where we're like, besides Brandon Woodruff, that's like, okay, we're all taking the under on this one. It's tough to find, but I think they're all going to be better. Let's put it that way. Let's talk Steven Matz. He got a bunch of strikeouts on Thursday. Didn't quite get the performance you would like in the end, but a 7.01 ERA with a 3.95 BABIP, 62% left on base, 18% home run to fly ball. But again, the 19% K to walk is near elite. And he showcased that again on Thursday. St. Louis, pitcher's park, good defense. Do we expect enough positive regression from 7.01, though, to get to 3.75?
I think barely. And maybe we should have gone like four ERA for some of these guys.
Yeah, we might have more involved for sure.
I think Matz is at least close enough that I'll say with a little bit more luck that he'll get under 3.75. Most of the projection system, Steamer's got him at a 3.91 ERA for the rest of the season. But today was like a microcosm, gave up of his season. Gave up, I think, 3 runs, but 7 strikeouts, no walks. The swing strike rate is way up from 9% up to 12% this season. So I like what I see with Matz. You mentioned the defense. I think he's going to be close enough that I'll mix it up a little bit and go under. And that's huge, under 3.75. That's an ERA cut in half of his 7 right now. So I'm not worried at all about Steven Matz for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think you can go under too. At worst, I think you're going to get a very, very solid pitcher the rest of the way, especially in like 15 team or deeper. I got to have, he's probably already rostered. I'm not going to be silly, but he's going to have some 12 team viability coming forward here for sure. So I'll take the under too. I'm giving you the option right now. We could do this at this moment. I drew a line in the sand on my chart here for the overperformers. We can keep it at 3.75. Do you want to go 4 for the underperformers? You can redo our 3 guys we talked real quick.
Let's do the 4. Let's do the 4.
Okay. So Nick Pivetta over under 4.
I had under 3.75, so thanks for good. Thanks for the cushion.
So you're good. With the 4, though, I'll take the under as well, because that's where I was saying he's like close to like 4.41. So I'll take the under. I'll get a little more aggressive with Pivetta and go under 4. Mitch Keller, over under 4.
Said mid-4, so I'll stick with that.
Yeah, I'll stick with over just because he's going to be better, but I still expect a few blowups. There's going to be some Mitch, because that's his biggest thing. When he can't locate, the fastball gets hit. That's just what Mitch Keller does. Now, the fun one, Steven Matz, we both took under 3.75, so I think we're good there. But I wanted to change it for one of the last ones we'll discuss here, because at least brings these guys back into question. And I wanted to bring up Germán Márquez, because we already know that Germán Márquez, Coors Field, duh, like that's simple. We've seen seasons where Germán Márquez on the road's elite, at home's rough. We've seen the home be okay. Like, we've seen up and downs with Germán Márquez. But when he's on, he's a very, very good pitcher. 6.47 ERA, 3.65 BABIP, 11% K to walk is way below the norm for Germán Márquez. 22% home run to fly ball. Do you see anything that gets you to think under 4 from that 6.47, or is Márquez potentially broken the rest of the way?
No, and I've been in the past, I've been huge on Márquez. Like, his skills from 2018 through like 2020, I think were excellent. And I was just kind of waiting for him to get traded, waiting for the results to catch up to the skills, and it just kind of never happened. Well, now the skills are starting to deteriorate. You look at the swinging strike rate, which has always been above average, always been over 12%, is down to 8.8% right now, and the whiffs have tanked as well. So he's kind of deserved the lack of strikeouts, and I don't see too much of that coming back. So I see kind of more of like a Mitch Keller type mid-4s ERA for Márquez the rest of the way, and that's something I never thought I'd say a couple years ago, because I was super high on Márquez.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, because I was drafting. I actually picked up Márquez in 12 teamers last year, and did the whole, you know, road home sit starts. And the thing that I always loved about him was the strikeout rate. No matter how bad he would be runs wise, he'd still get you at least a K per nine, if not better. Like, he would figure that out. Like you mentioned, this year it's rough. It's rough, and you know, you don't go. People get mad when you see like the blues and the red lines on Savant, but it ain't pretty for Germán Márquez when you load that page right now. It's ice cold on Germán Márquez, which is very off the norm. But I pulled it up because I want to see what his velo has been looking like. And this year, fastball's at 94.7. He's 94.8 last year, so that's about the same. But he's given up a 404 batting average on the fastball this year, 336 XBA. Last year, 275. Like, that's a big difference. Tons of, like, it's just his fastball's getting crushed. Everything across the board, slugs, wOBAs, you name it, it's getting destroyed right now. Compared to his other pitches and compared to seasons past. So he's either not locating, this would take a much deeper dive than I'm prepared for right now. He's either just locating it poorly, or it's just super hittable right now. Because the velocity, I was expecting like a drop, it's about the same. So it's not the velocity. So just speculating, he's just locating it poorly. That'd be my speculation. I could be totally off, but they've almost doubled their numbers in the production off the fastball. And that's not good. Even the X stats for regression aren't great. 375, still not going to cut it. So I'm with you. I'm nervous for him, and I think he's over a four. So I just wanted to bring him up because I've heard him on discussed on other shows recently, and I want, and he showed up on this chart. So I want to see what your thoughts were, because I'm with you. I was a Marquez guy. I'm like, okay, like I believe in what he's got. Get traded. We'll have some fun. And now I don't even know if they can trade him right now. So it's going to be tricky for Germán Marquez.
Yeah.
All right. Any other underperformers you'd like to discuss before a couple listener questions?
So we did the 3.0 ERA for Pablo Lopez. Let's go back to Woodruff. Would you do over? Because I think the question people want to know is like, yeah. So yeah, you can probably get him at a discount, quote unquote, but should you pay for kind of what you paid on draft day?
Great question.
And I think that's where that over under lies of three with Woodruff. Where would you go with him at a three ERA?
Compared to his 5.97.
That's cutting it in half.
It is cut. That's a big cut, but like with Woody, the strikeouts, the swinging strikes, all the stuff you want to see is there. I'll take the under just for the fact that what we've seen from Woody in the past, like I've made this statement many times and people might think I'm crazy, especially with the start of this season. If Corbin Burns wasn't Corbin Burns, we'd be talking so much more about Brandon Woodruff last year. Like he was elite last year, but Corbin Burns just overshadowed the world. Now I might be overthinking it. So would you go over under three?
Even you're taking the under, even though his last four games, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati.
I know it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. I'm just, I'm trusting the overall, like what we're seeing, like quote unquote stuff from him. And I'm hoping it's something different. I could be totally wrong. If he's broken, I'm going to be sad. But the fact he's still striking guys out, like Woodruff's a guy that can easily put up like four straight starts of seven innings with no runs. And I would not be shocked, no matter who he faces. I'm going to take the under. I'm going to go on a limb here. I'm taking the under. I'm guessing by your statement, you're taking the over.
No, I was just trying to bait you to take the over. I'm taking the under too. I wanted to see if you would go over that. Cause the schedule, I kind of said that half kidding, but the schedule has been really kind to Brandon Woodruff and he hasn't delivered, yeah. but no, I'm not worried at all. The velocity's down a tick, but he's not still much. Missing tons of bats. With the fastball, the changeup's been great. Like it's just a minor uptick in walk rate and still throwing as many strikes as he always has been. That was kind of the ethos of my tweet. So I'm taking the under Brandon Woodruff 3 ERA the rest of the season, which means I think if you're in a trading league, you should pay for
his draft,
you know, price. Yeah, his draft price. And I don't think you're going to have to pay that much to get him anyway. So not concerned at all.
Let me throw some speculative things out here before we do listeners, because you're talking trades. I don't think enough people talk about trades because most people focus on NFBC and a lot of people play in trades leagues. I get a lot of DMs about it. You probably get questions about it. And a popular name right now because of how well he's performed is Carlos Rodon. And people can get a haul for Carlos Rodon right now because he's been great. There's no sugarcoating that. Would you go Woodruff or Rodon straight up?
That's a really good question. Before I answer that question, I will play politician here and lay out. I mean, I think it's just how do you trust Rodon? Like for on a per game basis, I'm taking Rodon.
How healthy do you think Rodon stays is what it comes down to.
Exactly. On a per game basis, it's Rodon. I'm going to lean Rodon. I thought no way I would say this like a month ago when the season just started, but I'm going to lean Rodon and trust that things stay intact with health at least for a couple more months. And I mean, you've watched him with the Giants, like he looks like one of the, I mean, if not the best pitcher in baseball right now. So I'll go Rodon just because I think he's that good and I'm willing to kind of stick my neck out. If you get three more months of what he's been doing, that's a league winner. So I'll go Rodon over Woodruff, but never thought I'd say that.
I'm with you. For anyone that's listened to my content for the last few years now, I'm a diehard Giants fan, as people know. Last year, I was fade Kevin Gausman because I didn't think the splitter could stick. And I was fade Rodon this year because I think he'd stay healthy. Long ways to go this year, but so far, I'm looking like a healthy 0 for 2 on those. So, but I'm always very pessimistic about my Giants. That's up front on the situation. So going into next year, keep an eye on who I'm saying and draft the crap out of them is what it comes down to. Another question on this one, because I think it's a fun one. Would you go Brandon Woodruff with the positive regression or the conundrum known as Walker Buehler?
I'll go Woodruff.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
I did mention Buehler as like an example of someone who has outpitched his peripherals for quite some time now. And that I think there is something to that on a few guys, and especially someone like Buehler. But the underlying skills with Buehler are starting to erode a little bit. And and they're not with Woodruff. So, yeah, I would take Woodruff rest of season over Walker Buehler.
Okay, last one I have for you, because we could do this all night, but this isn't even really a trade situation, but who has the lower ERA to finish the season? You got Woodruff at 5.97, and you got his teammate who's annoying the snot out of people, Freddy Peralta, who's at 4.40 right now.
So end of Woodruff season ERA, Peralta, like accounting.
Who has the lower ERA at the end of the season?
Not from today forward. So like Woodruff is already two runs behind.
Yeah, he's already two runs behind. Who has the lower ERA, Peralta and Woodruff?
I'll go Woodruff. If I'm saying Woodruff's going to be under a 3 ERA the rest of the season, I'm going to take Woodruff.
I love it.
Good one, I like that.
It's a man that stays by his name, because I like both these guys a lot going into the season. Peralta, and they've both been just like, both great matchups, obviously, same schedules. And you're just like, what in the world are we doing? And both of them are striking guys out. So the peripherals look really good on both of those two. So that's one reason why I wanted to bring Peralta up. He didn't check all the boxes for the board here, but I know people are frustrated with Freddy Peralta also. I get that a lot in like just even DFS circles. Like, why are you playing him? Just trust me. He's better than what's going on right now. Woodruff's much better than what's going on. Peralta's still better as well. Like, there's,
I think Peralta didn't make it because of the left on base, because of the homer to fly is only 4%. He's been really lucky with the home run luck, but the BABIP and left on base have been brutal. So
perfect. All right, we've got a couple listener questions and we'll rock on out of here. Kenny Davis asks, how would you rank these guys going forward? And he has all of them rock on his team. Jesus Luzardo, Patrick Sandoval, Alex Cobb.
I'll go Sandoval, Cobb, Luzardo.
I was going to go Cobb, Sandoval, Luzardo. That was mine. I'm still very skeptical on Luzardo.
We both have him last. The walk rate for me is a concern.
The stuff's elite, but the control is a whole other spectrum with him.
Yeah.
He kind of is what Freddy Peralta was like a year or two ago. That's the best analogy I can give if you want young pitchers with like really good talent. You just got to fine-tune that a little bit more.
Yep. And from like a volume standpoint too, he's never thrown 100 innings in the majors. Kind of a little bit both sides, double-edged sword. Like, obviously volume's a concern with Alex Cobb as well, but I think he strings it together just enough to keep there.
All right. The listener question we had on VR earlier, Eric Samolsky, multi-winner, FSWA Rider of the Year type candidate goodies. Let's talk about VR. I know people were in on him preseason, but he's been brutal. Horner injury just opened up time, Horner and Madrigal. But will it? Is it even worth it? I think it is for now. Like, run with it. If it doesn't pan out, so be it. But tell me who else you're picking up that could do what VR can do. Like, that, we talked about at the beginning, but yeah. Like, it's tough.
That's exactly it. Like, how many difference makers are, if he's available on your wire, how many difference maker? I mean, VR's been a $35 player twice already, with the 60 steals in 2016, the 40 steals in 2019. Like, that just does not show up in FAB. And so you need to take a shot. And if it doesn't work out, if he does get this extended playing time, it's been 2 to 3 weeks and there's still nothing there. You could be a little bit more aggressive with the drop, but like I said earlier, it's been intermittent playing time. Let him get in the groove now that he's going to play every day, and let's see what happens over these next few weeks. But I would be aggressive with VR.
All right. Mike John Ray asks, Spencer Strider, could he be valuable in 12s? I think he can be. I think he'd be very valuable. But I think your dog thinks he can be too.
They have some stride. They're striding towards the door right now. I think someone just knocked on the.
It's all good. I get it all the time. I like Strider a lot. I picked him up in a lot of leagues the last. I actually had him a couple weeks ago. Picked him up some more this week. I'm still speculating, but I think there's something coming there that's going to be fantasy goodness. I might be overconfident. What's your thoughts on Spencer Strider?
No, he's, I mean, things are going according to plan with Strider. Like his last appearance, I'm not going to say start, but his last appearance was 69 pitches against Milwaukee, 8 Ks, 4 innings. Like he stretches out just a little bit more, and I think you're golden there. I mean, the swinging strike 16%. He's throwing gas with a 98 mile an hour heater. That's again a Braves pitching organization that has obviously done great things with Max Fried, with Kyle Wright so far this season. That's an organization that knows what they're doing. So you kind of put all those pieces together, and I think you take somewhat of a leap of faith that Strider is going to get stretched out even more, and that plan is going to continue to work.
Yeah, what do you mean? They know what they're doing. Kyle Wright just got shelled, Ryan. Like we can't be right. doing this. All right, last listener question we have here is Joe G. Asks, he needs a catcher. Kirk, Narvaez, Heim. We talked about Heim early on the show. Which one of the three do you pick up?
I'm taking Heim. And we hit on him earlier. With Kirk, it's more like I think Danny Jansen's going to be back pretty soon, it sounds like, from that oblique. So I think that's going to start to cut into Kirk's playing time. And Narvaez is just kind of okay. 250 batting average, 2 homers, kind of is who he is at this point. So I'd go Heim in the short term. And then if you need to keep on going, Joe, like, you know, even if Heim goes back to kind of being the second catcher in Texas, just start streaming those second catchers and look at the weekly matchups. Okay, who's matchups. Playing? Who's got 7 games? How much are lefty-righty? Because a lot of these catcher platoons are lefty-righty, and you can kind of do it on a week-by-week basis if you're willing to put that time in and do it. I've done that on a lot of teams where my second catcher is just kind of a throwaway, and I'm just streaming based on matchups that week.
100%. Like, and the bad thing is I love all these catchers, like especially preseason. I think Kirk's the better hitter. Jansen's been playing well, though, and he's coming back, and they want the defense. So you're right. He's going to get the time. The thing with Narvaez, which is frustrating, him and Caratini are almost in a 50-50 platoon. Like, it's not even almost righty-lefty. It's almost straight up 50-50 with them. And that's the frustrating part. It's working out well for him because it keeps them both healthy and they're playing. So you got to go Heim right now. Like we talked about, if he can play even 5 out of 7 days a week, like you take that and run with it, see where it goes. If you had a platoon later, the one thing I'll say, you didn't mention him, so he might not be available, but I don't do a lot of prospect ads, but if MJ Melendez is available, please grab him. That's the one thing I'll say. Like he might not be, he probably should be gone by now, but just in case I want to mention it. Because I think he's going to play nearly every day. The fact they put him in right field, they're DHing him, they are trying to find ways to keep his bat in the lineup. And I would, that's the, like we talk about in the preseason, like the JTRs and all these guys that can DH, play first base, like they play 150 games a year at catcher. That's elite. Melendez can do that potentially if they keep doing what they're doing with him. He's pretty much playing every day. So I think that's one you should look at. If you can, he's probably not available, but I just want to throw it out because. Yeah. I get questions on some guys with people that drop certain guys in leagues, and it blows my mind who's available in some leagues. So if he's available. Like,
and I think a lot of people get burned by it. And we've done research on this at HQ is that catchers tend to kind of bloom later on in their career just because it's such a freaking learning curve to catch at the major league level. And Melendez doesn't have to do that. He's DHing a lot and playing corner outfield. Like, that's a big load off of Melendez's shoulders. He can pretty much just focus on hitting and not getting used to a new rotation, getting used to the way that catchers play in major league games. That's a big adjustment for most catchers who actually have to play the position.
100%. So it's a fun way to end out the show. Talking catchers. Always good.
How do we get to that?
We ended it with a bang. We ended up with regression pitchers and catchers. So welcome to mid-May fantasy baseball. Wait and see what July brings you guys. It's going to be a blast. But any final thoughts, Ryan, as we wrap up another wonderful episode of Bubba and the Bloom?
No, man. I think, except for my Pivetta pick, I'm pretty confident you're going to be buying me beers in Arizona, either during the show, during the live show, or on the course. I'm feeling pretty good.
If it means that we're in Arizona hanging out and drinking beers, that's fine. I'll take that. I'll take that loss, and we'll have a blast with it. But I have a hunch we might be playing more games along the way because I'm very competitive. So we might be having to do some more Bloom Board games. This was a fun little twist on it, besides just the analysis part of it. And we might have to have some fun with this one going forward. So we'll see what happens. But we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you guys follow Ryan on Twitter @RyanBHQ and always work over at baseballhq.com. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric, and we'll be back with you guys next week with another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. This was, though, episode 7, your pitching over and under performers. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.